The Rizzuto family is one of the most powerful and financially successful North American mafia families in history. At its peak, the family made hundreds of millions of dollars moving drugs, running gambling operations, loan sharking, and conducting other rackets. The family was so powerful that it is sometimes referred to as the Sixth Family. I'm Brian McCoy. Welcome to the Mob Files. Hello everyone and welcome into episode 7 of the Mob Files. Our subject for this week is the Rizzuto family from Montreal, Canada, our first international subject. Today's episode will focus on the overall history and leadership of the family. As you will hear a bit about, the family has been engaged in a brutal fight to stay on top in Montreal for more than a decade. I will hit the high notes of the conflict today, but I do plan on recording a later episode that will focus solely on the war. The Rizzuto family is the main subject of season 1 of the Netflix series Bad Blood. I really enjoyed it, so check it out if you get a chance. My understanding is that after the first season, it veers into other related subjects, mainly a top associate of the Rizzutos. I haven't watched beyond the first season, so I'm not sure, but I can highly recommend the first one. A friendly reminder to subscribe or follow if you enjoy today's episode. New episodes are released every Thursday. With that, let's dive in. The Rizzuto family was founded by Niccolo Rizzuto Sr., a Sicilian immigrant in the 1970s. Niccolo Rizzuto was born in 1924 in Sicily and immigrated to Montreal in 1954 with his wife and son Vito. Rizzuto was involved with the Cotroni family in Montreal. The boss of that family was Vincenzo Cotroni. He got sick in the 70s and a struggle broke out over who would replace him. It's important to know that the Cotroni family had both the Calabrian and Sicilian side. Cotroni and most of the top leadership was Calabrian. Rizzuto was a major player on the Sicilian side. He saw the writing on the wall that the Calabrians were likely to exclude him from the top job, so he chose to branch out and start running his own show. Obviously, this pissed off the Calabrians and a war broke out between the two factions. The Calabrian faction was led by the three Violi brothers. They tried to take out Nico early on in an effort to end the war. This attempt failed and Rizzuto responded with brutal force. All three brothers were killed within 3 years. The Sicilians had won the war and Nico Rizzuto was now the boss of the family. Rizzuto was well respected from his time in the Cotroni family and how he fared during the war. Because of this, he was able to consolidate power quickly. By the 1980s, the Rizzutos were the dominant organized crime group in Montreal. Niccolo Rizzuto was the founder of the family and led them to the top of the criminal world in Montreal, but his son Vito took things to a whole different level. Vito Rizzuto was born in 1946 in Sicily, and as I mentioned, he immigrated with his father and mother to Montreal in 1954. He worked under his father for years, and at some point he took over day-to-day operations of the family. This likely occurred pretty soon after the Rizzutos became the top organized crime group in Montreal in the 80s. Vito quickly became known as a masterful negotiator and mediator. One of the major accomplishments of his criminal career was bringing together criminal groups that otherwise would have never dreamed of working together. But Vito got it done. He brought together the Haitian gangs, Hell's Angels, other motorcycle clubs, among other gangs as well. He was so trusted, in fact, that he was brought in to mediate disputes between rival gangs. This includes a bitter dispute between two Haitian street gangs, and also a bloody conflict between Hell's Angels and a rival motorcycle club. This is one area that separates Vito from a lot of mob bosses. He greatly preferred diplomacy over violence. The relationships Vito built allowed the family to expand its operations in a number of areas. This includes drug trafficking, which would serve as a major moneymaker for the family. Montreal is the perfect city to base such an operation in. The Montreal port allows drugs to be brought in, and the city's proximity to major cities in the northeast United States make it a prime location from which to distribute. This, of course, includes New York City, one of the biggest hubs for drug dealing and drug consumption in the world. This is exactly what the Rizzutos did. Vito controlled the port, paying off the right people. The family imported and distributed weed, heroin, cocaine, really anything they could get their hands on. They worked with other crime groups to get this done. Again, Vito realized that there was a lot more money to be made working together than if they went solo on everything and had to fight all the time for territory. They were also involved in typical organized crime rackets like loan sharking and illegal gambling operations. The family was extremely successful from a financial standpoint, earning hundreds of millions of dollars a year from their various rackets. I have talked in previous episodes about the importance of political connections for mob families. Control over public officials can allow a family to operate freely without constantly looking over their shoulders. It has other benefits as well. In this case, I'm talking about government contracts. As I discussed earlier, Vito Rizzuto was great at building relationships. This included with local politicians, private industry leaders, and union officials. These relationships allowed the Rizzutos, along with other groups in Montreal, to infiltrate the procurement process and steer big government construction projects to vendors they were friendly with. The Rizzutos were compensated well for this by the construction companies. Vito was even brought in to mediate disputes between the various parties involved in the scheme to make sure that things ran smoothly. Leaders in Montreal eventually caught on to the corruption, well, at least the leaders who weren't complicit or outright involved with it in the first place, and a massive investigation was started in 2011. Vito and his father were named as big players in the schemes. One of the big pieces of evidence brought by the investigators was a video of Nico Sr. stuffing cash into his socks during a meeting with a construction boss. But by the time the investigators wanted to bring the Rizzutos in for questioning, Nico Sr. was already dead. Vito was scheduled to testify, but he also passed away before it actually happened. We'll hear more about that in a minute. Vito Rizzuto was able to avoid serious run-ins with the law for most of his life. He did serve 18 months in the early 70s for arson. He burned down a building to try to defraud an insurance company. But other than that, he stayed out of prison for decades. His luck ran out in the early 2000s, specifically in 2004. Rizzuto was indicted by a federal grand jury in New York on multiple charges. The most serious issue was the 1981 murders of three Bonanno captains in New York. The Rizzutos have always had a strong connection with the Bonannos. American law enforcement even considers the Rizzutos just a Bonanno crew. The point could be debated all day long, but there is certainly a relationship between the two groups. The Bonannos called on Nico Rizzuto Sr., to help with an issue they were having in their family. Specifically, there was three captains that decided they wanted to take a run at the leader. They wanted to try to take over the family. Nico Sr. decided that he would help out, and he sent Vito to New York. Vito and two other men ambushed the three captains who had been set up and brought to a bar in New York. You might be asking yourself, why was this just coming up more than 20 years after it happened? Well, multiple members of the Bonanno family had flipped and were offering up information in an attempt to get reduced sentences. The captain who set up the murders was prepared to testify against Rizzuto. Vito was ultimately charged for conspiracy to commit murder. Despite the strong evidence and the witnesses against Rizzuto, he was not charged with first-degree murder. This could have been because prosecutors felt it would be too tough of a case to make so many years later, but it also could have been because they were worried Canada would refuse to extradite Rizzuto if they knew he was facing the more serious charge, and potentially even the death penalty. In May of 2007, Rizzuto pleaded guilty to racketeering. Under the agreement, he would serve 10 years in federal prison in the United States. The power vacuum created by Vito's incarceration would spark an extremely bloody period in Montreal. As you've probably caught on by now, Vito Rizzuto was a unique mob boss. He preferred diplomatic solutions over violence, but it was also well known that people couldn't mess with the Rizzutos and get away with it. He wasn't afraid to flex his muscle when he had to, but that fear largely went away when he did. The Rizzutos quickly came under attack after Vito went to prison. Various groups decided that now was their chance to strike. This included various groups of mobsters that Nicolo Rizzuto had displaced when he took control of the city, and it also included various street gangs. Now, as I said, I'm going to do a separate episode specifically focusing on the Montreal mob war, but I'll hit some of the high notes here. Well, I wouldn't necessarily call them high notes, but I'll go over some of the major events here. In September 2007, Frank Velanosi, a high-ranking member of the Rizzuto family, was found dead in the trunk of his car. In 2008, another soldier, Constantine Alavisos, was killed. Alavisos was accused of stealing money from the family. The violence continued in 2009. There were multiple mob hits, but the most shocking one came in late December. Nicolo Rizzuto Jr., Vito's son, who was named after his grandfather, was gunned down in the middle of the day near his office. While other murders had already happened and more would soon occur, this one was different. It was a matter of when, not if, the Rizzutos would retaliate. The family continued to experience severe turbulence. Acting boss Agostino Contrero was killed in June 2010. Another major blow occurred in November of that year when Nicolo Rizzuto was shot and killed by a sniper while sitting at his kitchen table. In 2011, New York mobster Sal Montagna of the Bonanno family was murdered. The story behind this hit is wild. It involves one of the most powerful non-Italian associates in the history of the mob. I'm talking about Reynald Desjardins. Desjardins, despite being French-Canadian, still rose to be a top figure in the Rizzuto family. He was a very trusted lieutenant of Vito Rizzuto. His ties to the mafia trace back all the way to his teenage years. In the 70s, he was a close associate of the Catroni family in Montreal. He was brought into the Rizzuto family when they started taking over the Catroni's rackets in the late 70s and early 80s. By the mid-1980s, Desjardins was considered Vito Rizzuto's right-hand man. Desjardins had a lot of connections with biker gangs, so Rizzuto often sent him to work out details on the partnership between the two groups. In 1993, Desjardins was arrested on drug charges. The government offered a sweetheart deal if he gave up Vito Rizzuto, but he refused to do it. He was ultimately sentenced to 15 years in prison. He didn't serve the whole 15, but he still had a lengthy stay. He was released in June of 2004 and claimed that he was going legit from that point forward. In reality, he continued to work for the Rizzutos. Desjardins had proven his loyalty to Rizzuto by refusing to flip on him, but this loyalty faced a new test when Vito was sent to jail in the mid-2000s. The potential for power proved to be too much for Desjardins to resist. He decided to partner with Montagna in an effort to take control of the city. Eventually, the two had a disagreement. There was an attempted hit on Desjardins in 2011, and he believed that Montagna was behind it. That was the final straw. 2 months later, the hit on Montagna happened. Desjardins was eventually arrested for his role in the murder and pled guilty in 2015 to conspiracy to commit murder. He was sentenced to 14 years in prison. He actually got out a couple years ago, but he was sent back in when he violated the terms of his release. Okay, getting back on track here with the mob war. In 2012, the Rizzutos continued their revenge tour by taking out four men who had flipped their loyalty over to Montagna. Additionally, two Haitian street gang leaders who were believed to be helping in the efforts to overthrow the Rizzutos were gunned down as well. The bloodshed continued into 2013 when the family took out at least three more men who had chosen to work against them. The family was not without losses during this time though. Walter Gutierrez, who was one of the Rizzutos' top money launderers, was killed in July 2012. They lost several other loyalists in 2012 and 2013 as well. In 2014, Decarme Joseph, a powerful Haitian gang leader, was murdered. There is speculation that Joseph was behind the Nick Jr. hit. If this is true, it was really only a matter of time until the Rizzutos caught up with him. 2016 was a tough year for the Rizzutos. Two very high-ranking members of the family were killed. Lorenzo Giordano was killed in March, and in late May, acting boss Rocco Sollecito killed just down the street from a police station. There have been at least a dozen more mob-related murders in Montreal since then. Again, the war will be covered in more detail in a future episode. But what I just went over should give you some idea of just how chaotic things got when Vito was sent to prison. The murder of their acting boss and underboss in 2016 was obviously a major blow for the Rizzutos. They were in something of a spiral ever since Vito went to prison. The general consensus is that he would get things back under control when he was released in 2012. However, as I mentioned earlier, Vito died in 2013 from cancer, among other illnesses. Before he passed, he had orchestrated a number of hits, including a lot of the ones I just mentioned in the previous segment, as revenge for the murder of his son and father. But he simply wasn't around long enough to get the city back under his control fully. Vito died and the chaos simply continued and even intensified. It is believed that Rocco Sollecito's son Stefano and Leonardo Rizzuto, Vito's other son, are currently in command of the family. It appears that the mob war may finally be setting down in Montreal and that the Rizzutos may actually have come out on top. There are indications that they have rebuilt several of their alliances from the Vito days, including with the Hells Angels Motorcycle Club. The Rizzuto family is one of the most powerful in the history of the Mafia. They were the unquestioned leader of the Montreal underworld for decades under the leadership of Vito Rizzuto. While there has been a significant amount of turbulence in the years following his incarceration and death shortly thereafter, it appears that a new generation of leadership has the family back on top. Thank you for listening to Episode 7 of The Mob Files. If you enjoyed, be sure to subscribe. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. Thanks again, and have a great day.